Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive during the pandemic, on Broadway, in London, and around the world. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Lynette Linton. The young writer, director, and arts leader is the artistic director of London's Bush Theater, and she was just wrapping up her first full season at the Bush when the pandemic hit. As a director, she helmed the Donmar Warehouse's production of Lynn Nottage's Sweat, which went on to a West End run and won Best Play at last year's Evening Standard Awards. Her staging of Richard II at Shakespeare's Globe last year was the first ever company of women of color in a Shakespeare play on a major UK stage. Her most recent work as a writer is the short film Look at Me, which just aired in the UK as part of ITV's Unsaid Stories series of shorts, inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement. Linton is in the virtual studio with me to talk about staying nimble, surviving the pandemic, and how the theater industry is forging ahead across the Atlantic.
Hi, Lynette. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah. Well, I want to start by talking about something that seems pretty exciting in terms of progress on your end, which is that your theater just opened, but first, or reopened the building. But first, let's for listeners who might not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about The Bush and its work?
Yes. The Bush Theatre is a new writing venue in West London, in Shepherd's Bush. And we are known for championing playwrights and emerging talent and running workshops and schemes to work with writers and support them through their first play. I took over as artistic director last year. So I was officially in the job for a year before Corona struck. We launched my first season with like a season of debut plays from British and Irish writers. And we're also a community theatre, so we do a lot of community work in our local area. So we are pretty cool.
And you were almost done with your first season when Corona shut everything down? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, almost done. We had one more show. So we had the High Table in our main space and Collapsible in our studio space. And then we had one more show that was going to start in May. We didn't even get into rehearsals for that show. So we nearly got to the end, which is sad.
So tell us about reopening. You reopened this building. You've got this complex. It's got two theaters. It's got a bar, right? Tell us about the building and what you're doing there.
Well, the building is an old library, which I always love. It feels like that. And I think that I always talk about how I feel the presence of the building, and I've missed the building because it's got such a history in its area. One of the hardest things I found among all of the hard things that we're all going through was how much I missed the building. And when things were happening in the world, our response is always to make art, but also to open our spaces for the community to be together and heal together. And we weren't able to do that at all because of COVID. So as soon as we were going to be able to safely open for our community, that's what we were going to do. So I knew as soon as I could do that, with social distancing in place, that was what we would do. And so we're one of the first theatres in London to do that, open for community work, open for young people, and then also open our bar so people can come and have a pint if they want, which is quite nice.
And is that all outdoors? Tell us about some of the safety measures that you have to think about.
Yeah, so it's not all outdoors. The way our building works, we've got a lovely terrace that the doors open up, so you can sort of sit inside, but you've got the space outside. So most people are doing that, obviously, because it's safer. But right. we've done loads of risk assessments and insurance to safeguard the building. The theatre space itself, we put lines on the floor. So we're going to be running summer workshops next week for young people who haven't had as much Wi-Fi or want introduction to drama. And so we've put all these precautions in place, and so no one will be near each other. There's air con, there's all of the stuff that we all, hand washing, sanitizers everywhere, all of that. So we put in a lot of precautions. They've taken a lot of work. So shout out my general manager, who's worked really hard on that.
Yeah. And it feels like, in particular, the community is very important to the Bush in everything it does and in the work you do. Tell us about how you think of the Bush being woven into the community and why that's so important for the theatre.
I think that theatre full stop should be, when it has lost its why it's there, which is to feed the community and be fed by the community, it's lost what it's supposed to be doing, right? So theatre is about telling stories and bringing us together, and we learn from everybody outside our doors, and we're supposed to be representing what's actually going on in the world. So I don't understand how theatre can't be community led in that way, if that makes sense. I wouldn't be in my position at all if I hadn't access to young people's schemes and understood what theatre was. It wasn't something that came naturally to me. So I feel so passionate about that. I feel so passionate that we're in such a beautiful space in Shepherd's Bush. So it needs to feel like a place that everybody feels welcome.
And how's it going? Are people turning up? And you've been open for like about a week now, right?
We've been open a whole week today. people are coming, and the community are coming, and we're doing community work with different charities. So it's nice. It's a pace that we can control, which is lovely. We're going to keep. It's really lovely weather over here at the minute as well. A little too hot, so that's helpful. Because people are coming out and having a cold beer on the terrace and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it's really nice to be open again.
And so there's no theater happening yet in the building in terms of performances, that is.
No, but we have been for the last, since we got shut down, we have been producing loads of online work. We haven't put out any of our existing productions, so like archive recordings, because we felt like the time would be now to make new work. So we did our Monday monologue series, and in reaction to George Floyd's death and the Black Lives Matter movement, our associate director also curated. His name's Daniel Bailey. He's amazing. He curated the protest series. So we've got masterclasses online. We've been doing loads of work. We haven't done physical performances because that's not safe at the minute, but we are putting loads of new content out.
And what do you have a prognosis for when you think live performances with groups of people might happen again?
I don't, and I am taking it day by day. That's my answer to that question. I'm sure you're aware that we were at a place where we were gonna, the government had said we were able to, and they pushed that back now. So because of that, and because of how much it's all changing day by day for all of us, I'm sort of trying to be positive. We've got plans in place, but also very nimble and able to shift those if we need to.
Yeah, people on Broadway are very watching very closely all the stuff that's going on in the UK, because they're talking, there was that sort of initial West End performance with was it Beverly Knight that in one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's theaters, and it seems like, the Bridge Theater is sort of raring to go, as so many theaters are. What's the kind of calculus for, I imagine the calculus for a kind of West End theater and for theaters like the Bush, which are much more intimate, they're smaller venues, that must be an entirely different sort of set of concerns.
Yeah, and a very different setup over here. So we call the West End theaters, the commercial sector. They are funded by individuals. We are subsidized, so we get Arts Council grants. The Bush does. So some of our money comes from the Arts Council, and then we fundraise the rest of it. So they are completely different in how they're set up structurally anyway. And then now with Corona, I think the thing we all have in common is yearning to get work back on, but we're all in very different situations, I think, individually.
Yeah. And where is the Bush as a subsidized theater in terms of how it how it's going to survive in the next few years in terms of is that support, that fund? There was that big government sort of rescue fund. Yeah. Is that part of the thing that goes to? Does that help you guys?
Hopefully, we have to apply for that money, and we will be applying. Right. My answer is hopeful for that. I think that we are small and nimble, we're sailing through. I keep using loads of sailing metaphors to get us through this. So I'm hopeful, but again, I always reiterate day by day, because this thing is such an unprecedented, is the word that everyone keeps using, isn't it? Like, we just don't know what tomorrow brings. So day by day, I have to take it so that we can sail this ship through. But right now, today, we're in a place where hopefully it looks okay.
Yeah. Have you felt that guidance in the UK industry overall has been pretty strong? Have you felt shepherded or helped, or does it feel more every person for themselves?
I think what's been really lovely is that I felt particularly in the subsidized sector that I've been able to lean on my peers, so other artistic directors and run venues where I'm able to reach out to them and so there's a lot of people. I don't feel like it doesn't feel like you're on your own in this, if that makes sense. So I've been able to develop quite a lot of friendships with colleagues of mine who I hadn't spoken to before. So that's, in a way, a really lovely positive that's come from this.
Right. And so as you try to look ahead, what is coming up in the next, let's say, month for you at the Bush?
Do you mind if I talk a bit longer than a month? Because I feel like
the
concerns for me at the minute is supporting the community, as I've mentioned. Yeah. I think we're doing as much as we can. And once we know that we can do the limited activities that we've put in place safely, we will expand that. And then the other side for me is supporting our creative freelancers. So we have hundreds of freelancers we work with per year. And as soon as we can start putting work back on, the priority is to get as many freelancers in to employ them, you know? And so for me, all the plans that we're putting together is both of those missions, both of those layers of how we can support the community and how we can support our freelance family at the Bush.
How is the kind of safety net for freelance artists in particular in the UK? It doesn't really exist here, so
it doesn't really exist. I mean, there's been some support from the government in terms of self-employment support, but there are hundreds of people that have fallen through that net as well, you know, because it's all eligibility and you have to, you know, be able, on paper, fit the criteria. So I think there's a lot of people that have completely fallen through that, which is really sad and devastating. And I think because we don't know when, you know, here pubs and restaurants are reopening and you go out onto the street and it feels like things are slowly starting to get back to normal with masks, to be honest. But theatre isn't. So I think that there's an element here of going, okay, cool. So how are we going to be supporting freelancers and people going forward if our industry is still closed? And so that's what I mean about, for the Bush, the priority is to make work so we can employ as many people as we can.
Right, yeah.
Because as I said, there's a lot of people that's fallen through the cracks. So, and the people, and also the, as you know, support is stopping, so.
Right, yeah. And of course, in the midst of all this, the Black Lives Matter movement returned, and in the wake of the uprisings that came after the murder of George Floyd, and here on Broadway, it's prompting some really serious discussions about the ways that Broadway and the U.S. industry needs to change. Mm-hmm. How are you finding that playing out on your side of the pond?
Yeah, I think it's a similar thing here. We at the Bush were and have been very vocal about that conversation and have put some work out responding to it, the protest series.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah. That was in direct response to...
And those were new works as part of the protest series? Yeah,
they were new works and worked with some of our artists to make something, and it was fast response, and so they came out quickly. Right. Because again, this feeling of being alone in your bedroom, you know, was also part of that, when actually, as I said, I would have opened the building and made everyone come, well, not made everyone, but invited people to come together to be in this moment of healing, and we couldn't do that. So art was our way forward and always will be. But I think that systematic change is a huge thing that I've been fighting for a long time, and I've been very vocal about here in this country. There's still such a long way to go when it comes to diversity and representation in theatre and all the industries across the all the creative industries, across all industries actually. But so there's a lot of that. Well, it's happening here too, and it needs to.
Right. What's your take on how the equity work in the UK theatre industry is faring compared to how it's going here in the US?
Yeah, I think we had slowly started to see some changes on stage. And we started to see more representation there. I think behind the scenes, there was and still is so much work to be done. And because the Bush is a new writing venue, one of my particular focuses is on writers and how many Black British writers or British Asian writers were getting their work commissioned and on main stages. We had only in the last year was the first time a Black British female writer was in the West End, you know, in 2019. So that shows you that, you know, that's the levels we're dealing with here. And I also think it's really important to make sure that COVID doesn't, I'm going to swear because you said I could, fuck up the progress, you know, because we don't want to be looking back and then everybody's doing work that you know, isn't going forward because they're scared of what COVID's done. So we're going to really fight against that here, I hope, because I will. In the Bush here.
Yeah. Are you finding, for you personally at the Bush, you're talking about being nimble in the era of COVID. Does that also allow you a greater nimbleness to sort of rethink the way you do things systemically in terms of representation and equity and things like that?
I think the answer for that is yes, and also should be the case across the board, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think the conversations around traditional theatre sometimes can feel quite old school in a way that's not helpful, you know. Right. And I've spoken quite a lot publicly about this word risks, and I've been like, I want to take risks, and then I now retract that word because I'm like, risks, what does it mean? All art is risky, you know. And so if you're gonna put on a good story, it's universal because it's a good story, if that makes sense. So I think that we've got a reputation for unheard voices and championing diversity, and I think that it needs to be a thing that's now worldwide in the theatre sector. It shouldn't feel like that's a risk and feel separate from putting on a Shakespeare, because come on now, we've been doing that for hundreds of years.
And in a way, thinking about that as risk is part of the thing that keeps people away from it, right?
Exactly.
To label it that way.
Yeah, and you know, it's that whole conversation around what the canon is. You know, when we talk about the British canon of work, you know, it is dominated by Shakespeare and a lot of white male writers or white writers, and that needs to shift because that's the tradition, and we need to be past that now. It's 2020. So
Who are, in your estimation, in the UK is doing work either creatively or as an activist that you feel like we should all be following here in the US?
Oh, well, you know that Renzo Kenny's Misty was about to come to New York before coronavirus hit. He's incredible. His show Misty started at the Bush Theatre before I had taken over and had a West End transfer and was coming to the Shed in New York. And so that was I hope it still gets there. It's a beautiful piece of work around gentrification in London, what it means to tell Black stories. And I've always been a massive fan of his work, and he's incredible, and you should all know who he is. I think he's brilliant. We've got incredible activists and companies such as the Black Ticket Project, which is now, a project that's set up for young Black people to come to the theatre for free and to get more Black people into the theatre, which is exciting, and everybody should look that up. And maybe there should be a model or something like that in America as well. Maybe there is. Yeah. I don't know.
Not widespread that I know of. So yeah, that's good to know of that.
Yeah.
I'll have more with Lynette right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. And now, here's more with Lynette Linton.
So I'm talking to you the day after, you're also a writer, and you wrote a short film that came together in 4 weeks, as you were saying. It's part of Unsaid Stories, which is an ITV series of short films inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. Tell us about sort of what inspired your film and how it came together so quickly and safely.
Yeah. Well, my film is inspired by many experiences of family and friends and people I know and things I've read and just loads of different things about what it feels that the ongoing conversation around being stopped and searched by the police. And I felt like for me, what was never spoken about on a platform was the moment after or the moment before, you know, and how when something like that happens, it stays in your gut, it stays in your stomach, it stays with you. It's not something that happens, it's recorded, oh, it happened, I'm going to go on now. If it's a bad experience, that stays with you and can stay with you for life, you know. And so I felt like it was important to show that side of it and highlight that this is a thing that's been going on for decades and, yeah, and just see if there was some conversation to be had in that area, which we know there is.
So, right. Yeah.
And, but it came to the very fast, as you said, like literally the script was, I wrote the script in like 3 days, then I had to redraft it on the fourth day, and then it was cast, and then it was being filmed over Zoom and directed over Zoom, and it was so fast.
Crazy. And I did spend some time wondering how filming worked, because they were in this, these two people without masks were in an apartment, and I was, I assume, a third person to hold the camera, which may or may not have been an iPhone or similar, but it looked digital anyway. Tell us about how those sort of precautions came together.
Yeah, so all filming has started up here slowly, you know, and so everybody, the precautions would be that everyone's had a COVID test and that sort of stuff, excuse me. Right. Our director, who is an incredible guy called Francis Annan, incredible director, he was directing them over Zoom. They had a DOP who was operating a camera phone in the space with them and a COVID supervisor, making sure everything was safe. He was directing it over Zoom. And as far as I'm aware, I think he had like a 3-second delay. So what he saw was happening delayed. 3 or 4 second delay is what I heard. It was filmed over 3 days on this phone. But there was loads of precautions in place, loads of insurance in place that was to make sure that actors were safe.
And was there anything in that experience that made you think about new ways to think about telling more sort of overtly theatrical stories over, you know, the digital medium?
Yeah.
Which may be a thing that we're doing for a while.
I will always say that it would have been great to have more time on that project. I'm very proud of how it came out. I was very incredibly lucky that I had such a wonderful team, wonderful actors. You know, shout out Pepper and Pippa who were in it. They were fantastic. Yep. And Carol, our producer as well. But what I am interested in is responding to things fast. And so just putting Unsaid Stories aside for a second, the protest is an example of that. You know, and as long as you're being honest about how things have come about and how quickly they've been made, I think that's interesting as a medium. Very proud of the protest pieces as well.
And tell us a little bit about what the format of those were.
So they were we spoke to 6 of our artists. And it was whatever they wanted to do. So Anushka Lucas wrote a song and had a monologue. One was a visual piece about text messages. One was a direct monologue artistic piece, which had an actor perform it. It was whatever those artists wanted to do. That's what we did. And that was kind of the point. It was like, in this moment now, how are you feeling? And how do you want to respond using art? And Dan Bailey, who led the project, created a very safe space for us to be able to be honest about that and respond in the way that they wanted to respond. And so those pieces of work have been incredibly well received. And I think have done the best for us on our channels ever, which is really exciting.
That was going to be my next question, was how people accessed it. It was on your website?
Yeah, so it's on our Instagram and on our Twitter. And sure. we also had a Q&A the day, a live Q&A the day that they came out. They're on our YouTube channels as well. And they're all different pieces of media. So as I said, one's a song, one's a sort of text message piece, one's uses photos with a monologue over the top of it. So it's all different in how those artists wanted to respond to what was happening.
At that time.
And still happening now.
So that did that feel for you like a way forward in terms of how you might think about doing further stuff in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think so. And I think I you know, I'm such a theatre head that I'm like, oh, theatre, liveness, that it takes me a while to be convinced. It took me a while to be convinced to do stuff on video. And actually, you know, I've shifted now, as we all have. And I'm really interested in how, and it's not, it's never going to be as simple. What I don't agree with or like is let's just put a camera in an auditorium and film the show, because I don't think theatre, I don't think it translates in that way. The NT Lives work because, you know, they are really expensive cameras and edited together in a way that works. Whereas, you know, if you just put a camera in an auditorium and film it, you're not catching the liveness of theatre or the magic of theatre. So I want to stay away from that. But what I am interested in, different digital capture and what we can do that's exciting and that we can afford.
Right. Yeah. It's what's important to you. You're also a director. What's important to you in terms of preserving the theatricality of something when you're looking at it on a screen or recording it digitally? What do you have thoughts about what the key is to holding on to that theatrical sort of spark?
I think that NT Live do it really well. Have you seen some of the NT Lives?
They're very popular here.
I think they do it very, very well. But I also think what I'm interested in exploring, and this is a new territory for me, is actually like what is the, of course, the liveness element is what makes theatre so special. But I don't know if you actually can capture the liveness of it over this media, a screen, you know? So I'm interested in like, you know, what is the theatre version of a thing and what is the digital version of a thing and how do they merge together and how do they speak to each other and what does that look like as a new sort of new medium, you know? Because an NT Live works and I think they've cracked that. So if we're going to film a show, it needs to be in that medium. But I'm interested in that space between at the minute.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about what's coming up for you at the Bush, but what's happening with you as an artist as well? You were announced to direct a show at the National that I assume is probably still on the docket when it finally happens. Is that still tell us about that.
Yeah, it's still around. Obviously, no idea when it's going to happen. I predict it probably won't happen until next year now, I don't think. But as far as I'm aware, that's still on the cards. It's an American play by. Do you know the play?
I was excited for you to tell us what it is because she's a writer that I feel like we don't know enough about here in America.
She's just so amazing, isn't she? And I feel exactly the same. So it's called Blues of Alabama. Oh gosh, that was a tongue tie. It's called Blues of Alabama Sky, and it's by Pearl Cleage, and she's incredible. And I was actually hoping to meet her during this time, which is such a shame. And I read it and absolutely fell in love with it because it was a story about African-American friends and it was about them living, you know, and it wasn't about necessarily talking about being African-American. They're just living and vibes in and having a great time. I was so excited to start work on that. I think it will still, I hope it's, well, as far as I'm aware, it's still on the card. So that's really exciting. And I can't wait to meet Carl. I will come and meet her once we fly in properly again.
And what else is on your plate artistically? Are you doing any more writing? It sounds like you really enjoyed working on this your Unsent Stories project.
Yeah, I did. I am. I'm dabbling here and there. So I hadn't written anything for ages. So this was a real nice sort of reawakening for me. So yes, I'll say nothing that's going to be shared for a while because I would like longer than maybe 3 to 4 days to write something next time. yes, I will be writing more. Telly and film is interesting to me and something that I don't know enough about. So I always want to learn. So I'm thinking about those mediums a bit more. Theatre will always be the first love, though. Theatre is the...
Do you feel like, I feel like an artistic director in the US doesn't have, for who knows what reason, doesn't feel like they have the same freedom, or they don't take advantage of the same freedom that I feel like you in the UK do. Like, you are the head of an institution, but you're planning to direct at another institution, and you're writing for TV. And do you feel like there's that the industry is fairly agile like that, that you can slip pretty easily between those forms?
Yes, I think so. And I think it's really great that we have that set up here. I think that one thing I do believe in is how long. I think that I don't think it should be a cap, but I think you should really think about how long you run an institution. You know what I mean? So it should always be moving and cyclical and just changing. Right. So I think that's part of that conversation too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Who's running it and how for how long? Because
that's part of our equity conversation here in the US as well, just in terms of, you know, creating systemic change. So.
Exactly. And then within that, you know, ADs, artistic directors, and are artists and were artists before they took that job. And that doesn't, you know, and of course that is funneled into the space, but it doesn't stop this sort of individual creativity. So we do have a great setup here that we are able to do that, which I think works really well. But again, I think for me, it's the key of like how long you run an institution and what that is, and what that is your focus for a set period of time. You're there to make the change that you're there to make, and then you move on.
Yeah. You mentioned this earlier that we keep calling this time unprecedented, but it actually, you know, it really is. There are no real precedents that we can look to that really feel fully pertinent to where we are right now. Mm-hmm. So what for you are you taking as your lodestars as you move ahead?
I'm taking forward the strength and utter creativity of our industry and the people that work in it. This has been such a devastating time for so many freelancers, so many artists who are still fighting. And you know, we're in August. We shut down in March. It's such a long time, and yet still, every time I send onto Twitter, every time I have a conversation with a writer, I'm astounded by the utter creativity that is still keeping us going. And I talk a lot about James Baldwin and how I look to his work, particularly around Black Lives Matter, in what happened before. I look to his work and to his art and how he described what was happening. And I find that useful because it helps me get through where we are now, because I look to what came before and how art documented it. And that sort of idea keeps me going now within the Black Lives Matter movement, but also through Corona. Like how we document this through art, and how our artists are still thriving, even though our theatres are closed, our cinemas are about to reopen, or they might already be open. But you know what I mean? Like our places of art are closed, but our artists are still thriving. And so that is something that keeps me going every day, because I know that as soon as we can make the work again, there's going to be so much amazing work, and we'll all support each other in that.
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see what great work comes out of all this.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate your time, Lynette.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's really lovely to chat.
That was Lynette Linton, the writer, director, and industry leader who is the artistic director of the Bush Theatre in London. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe and find past episodes there and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. And just a quick note to listeners about our schedule. Stagecraft is currently releasing new episodes every other week, and we're going to stick to that schedule at least through the end of the year. So I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.